We're starting Perek Beis today. Let's do a simple, brief review of what we've been talking about up until now. We have started the Tanya, and we are laying the groundwork to understand what our Avaida is in this world. In order to do so, we have to understand, who am I? What am I, right? Am I a composite of my emotions? Am I a composite of my thought? What am I? And so we start off with different definitions to help make sure that the Alter Rebbe is actually communicating effectively with us. And he's reinstating certain things, keeping certain terms, and giving us new terminology, new definitions that we haven't yet considered before. So we have redefined or made sure that we're on the same page defining Tzaddik, Beinoni, and Rasha. We know that there's a perfect tzaddik. We now know that there's an imperfect tzaddik. There's a perfect Rasha. There's an imperfect Rasha. There's a Beinoni. What does that mean? It means that he has good in him, or that he has still remnants of bad in him. And those have to be worked upon, right? And when we speak about tzaddik, this is the one we usually talk most about. We'll talk about, just making sure this is working. Yeah. Okay. When we're talking about tzaddik and we're trying to understand what we are, of course, throughout the ages, we've always thought that we were all tzaddikim, and we're shown here that the Alter Rebbe is saying we're redefining the way you've thought of yourself and the way you think of others. You are not necessarily a tzaddik, but it is possible for you to be confused, like we've seen in other examples where Rava thought that he was a Rasha. Beinoni, and his student says, if you say that, then you don't make it possible for all of us to exist. Where was Rabbi coming from? Where was Abaye coming from? The idea is that there could be a tzaddik, but he has remnants of himself that he has yet to conquer, and he doesn't yet know if he fully conquered those deep innermost parts of himself. So he wasn't sure if he was an imperfect or a perfect tzaddik. We, of course, know that he was a perfect tzaddik. We have spoken about the two nefashes inside of a human being. We've only been introduced mainly to the first one. Why are we talking about that one first? Because it is the one that is most relevant to us. It's the one we know very, very well. The nefesh Bahamas, this life force, this human being, this voice inside of you that is all about survival. Okay, and within that voice is another voice which we're going to be talking about today. So Perek Beis is all about the Nefesh Elokis, the godly soul. But just to make sure we're reviewed, and then we'll dive into it. What is the Nefesh Bahamas? So the Nefesh Bahamas, this life force, this human being inside of you that is covering over your godly soul, that human that wants to survive, wants to make sure it ensures its survival, and the character traits that we said from YY Jacobson are, it is short-sighted, it is selfish, and it ultimately is always worried. And those things are very relevant and very, very apropos to everyone's experience, because we all think in terms of worry. We're always experiencing some level of anxiety. We all are always concerned about what interests us, not in a selfish way, I'm not trying to say that everyone, we're all selfish human beings, but we're self-oriented. We are self-gratifying. We want to make sure to ensure ourselves and our survival. So that is what the Nefesh Bahamas is concerned with. And it is also concerned with the superficial, the external. Doesn't necessarily dive deep, go further, try to see the depth beyond. It's not concerned with that. It's concerned with what is here. Okay, so that short-sightedness and that lack of ability to go beyond is also what reflects why it's so worrying, right? Why it's always worrying all the time, because the Nefesh Elokis, who's the exact opposite, right? It has the ability to be selfless. It has the ability to see beyond, to see deeper, to access depth. It wants depth, and it's always experiencing a sense of calm. The reason for that is because it literally lives and experiences Hashem, okay? That's what we're going to be going into today. We also reference to the concept of klipa. Important to just bring in all these words that we were talking about. These are words that we're going to be referring to throughout the Tanya. What is klipa? Klipa means covering or a shell. And that is what the Nefesh Bahamas is to the Nefesh HaLakis. It is a shell covering over the Nefesh HaLakis. Now, it doesn't mean that it's bad. Klipa is not necessarily bad. It just means that externally, you don't see godliness revealed within it, right? And we're going to be talking about this a lot more, but just in the very first chapter, we see how the Alter Rebbe is changing the way that we see the entire world. The world is no longer good or bad. The world is no longer tzaddikim versus rishayim. The world is no longer everything is perfect and things are imperfect. The Alter Rebbe takes it and makes it very simple. He says there's godliness and there's lack of godliness, where we see otherness. Obviously, anything that is otherness at its core has a piece of Hashem within it. There's no possibility for something to exist without having Hashem within it. Hashem, in some way, some form, keeping that thing into existence. And at the same time, what we're seeing when we look at the world, are we seeing godliness? That is kedusha, that is holiness. And if we're not seeing that, that is considered otherness. That is considered a klipa. Now, what is our mission? Part of our mission is to discover, to unravel, to take apart the klipa so that we could reveal what is within, what is inside, and reveal the godly spark within it. What does that actually mean? We're going to be talking about throughout the entire Tanya. But very important to note that the Alter Rebbe talks about Klipa versus Kedusha. Again, it's not good or bad. It's godliness. Everything is godliness if you have your godliness glasses on. Otherwise, like most of us, we see, we perceive the world through the Nefesh Bahamas' eyes, which means we immediately see the external. We see the otherness, we see Klipa. So when I'm looking at this, I don't know, water bottle, I don't see it as an opportunity to see how Hashem is vitalizing me and keeping me alive, and water is Chaim, is life, and will infuse me with the ability to go about my day and serve God. I just see water, right? It's just a bottle of water, okay? So that short-sightedness, that lack of depth is part of the short-sightedness of the Nefesh Bahamas. It's the perception, it's the way that the Nefesh Bahamas interfaces with this world. Fine. Now let's start with chapter two. What is the divine soul? What is the Nefesh HaLakis, the godly soul? Who is he? What is he like? Let's start with describing him. So it used to be that people would think in terms of a soul, and they would think that the soul is an intellect, right? It's your intellect, because that's kind of like the deepest part that we could very much relate to in ourselves. So people would think, okay, small intellect, small soul. Great intellect, great soul, you know, lofty soul. That's the way that we interacted with that idea. And there was room to agree with that and to think that that is actually true. Then the Alter Rebbe right away begins with defining what is the Nefesh HaLakis, and he calls it a chelek eloka mimal mamish. Okay, so we're going to go into those words for a little bit, because it's an important phrase that we hear throughout the Tanya. And remember that the Alter Rebbe put a tremendous amount of investment into the specification of his words. So very careful with his wording. And he said these words for a reason. Okay, so chelek eloka mimal mamish, what does it mean? A part of Hashem from beyond. What does that actually mean? Why does he use the word chelek, a part? So think of it in terms of like, what does the word chelek mean? Parts. What does that mean? So you could eat part of a cake, right? You could eat part of a cake and you could get the flour of icing, or you could not. And that makes a very big difference on a birthday party scale, right? So you could eat this cake and get a part of it that's good and a part of it that's not so good. We're not talking about that kind of chelek where there's difference. A little bit we are, but you'll see we're also not. And it's an important distinction to make. When we're talking about parts over here, we're talking about, let's say you tasted a part of a bottle of wine, right? More like sampled, like you sampled a bit of this wine. If you just took a part of this bottle of wine and you drank it, it's not any different than the other part of the rest of the wine, right? So when we say chelek eloka mimal mamish, we're actually going to be talking about the word chelek. There's a reason why the Alter Rebbe says the word chelek, because there's elements of both. On the one hand, it's a literal part of Hashem, And on the other hand, there's also difference. There's some distinction there. And we're going to go into the distinction of souls. So in order to understand this soul, we have to understand, what is a soul? What is God? What does it mean that this is a soul that's a part of God? How does that all make sense? So we get super philosophical right away in the beginning, okay? Now, the reason why I'm saying that is because, remember, we're trying to approach the Tanya from a place of Avaida. We want to be pragmatic. We want to be practical. And here we're going to be engaging our Nefesh HaLakis and kind of going deeper into these ideas so we can make them pragmatic and practical, okay? But first we have to get the ideas and understand what the Alter Rebbe is trying to say. So what does it mean that it's a chilek elokah mimal mamish, okay? A part of God from beyond. What does the word mamish mean also, right? What does mamish mean? Mamish means actually, okay? Literally. So the mamish here can be reflecting on that it's mamish from beyond. That is, it is God from beyond. It could also mean that this beyondness, right, this incredible, just a piece of Hashem, literally is invested in a physical body. And it's actually still a piece of God, a part of God in the actual body, which is so hard to understand, because why does that actually make, how is that even possible? How does that even make sense that there's a part of God within this body? So the Alter Rebbe continues on by trying to explain what a soul is, okay? So he says that when it came to the 6 days of creation, how does Hashem create the world? He spoke the world into existence, right? Every single aspect of Bereshis, Hashem speaks, and Hashem continuously, we'll see it in the second Sefer, maybe one day we'll learn Shar Yecheveh Amunah, where Hashem is continually speaking the world into existence. And on the sixth day, he created Adam slightly different. Not only did he make and create Adam as a form, but he also blew a neshama into Adam's body. He brought a different level of himself into Adam HaRishon. And the Alter Rebbe says, so too does he do to every single Jew. What is that? Ata nefachta bi, you blew a life into me, a source of life into me. What does that mean? What does it mean? So the Alter Rebbe then explains that when someone is breathing, right, and they take a very deep breath and they blow, there's a part of themselves that experiences almost like a weakening, where it like came from their innermost self. Now, obviously we're not talking about that aspect where Hashem experiences a weakening, God forbid, by blowing into us. But the aspect of the blowing that we're trying to bring out is that it came from deep within, right? So let's say singers very much practice with their breath and they work on what's happening with their breath. So there's like head voice where you're using much less breath. And then there's using, you know, a certain breath that's coming from the bowels of your body, right? Coming from deep, deep within. And you have to work on those muscles so that you'll be able to channel that breath through your voice box to be able to direct the voice to whatever heights you want to direct them to. The idea is that it's coming from deep within. So what does that mean? So the Alter Rebbe connects these two ideas to help us understand what we already know about God, what we already know about soul, and to help us try to like bring together these two ideas of the soul being coming from Hashem's innermost self, the soul being something that is not distinct from God, but at the same time is, the soul being something that is coming from a part of God that we need to understand, like what is Hashem too? So he engages in the whole conversation of what is Hashem and why do we call Hashem his wisdom? And so without trying to get too philosophical here, between the camp of the philosophers and the camp of the Kabbalists, but the idea is that there is a level of Hashem called intellect, chachma. What is the level of intellect? The level of intellect is kind of like it's the beginnings of creation, where creation can understand, right? That is intellect. There is comprehension there. That is where creation comes from. That level of Hashem is where creation comes from. Does it mean that Hashem's Chachma is separate from him? Absolutely not. It is a part of him that he expresses, right? Just like you can't say a person is their brains, right? Imagine if there was like a mother who said like, oh, my kid is his brains. That's all he is. No, there's so many other aspects to him. There's this kind heart and there's his love towards his friends and how he interacts with other people. It's also a very important part of him. For her to limit him just to how smart he is would be a lessening of who he is, right? So Hashem is not just his Chachma, it's him. Anything that comes from that creation comes from his intellect, and we know specifically the souls come from that sphere, which means that the Nefesh HaLakis, this godly soul, has this ability to understand that it is a distinct creation, and at the same time is nothing other than part of Hashem, right? So it sees within itself that it is a creation of God, and at the same time, nothing other than connection with God. So the Nefesh HaLakis that is invested in every single one of us has that deep knowledge. It comes from that place, that part of Hashem, where nothing else exists. It's just godliness. And there's also an element of it being a chelek, a part of Hashem. Does that make sense? Okay. Because it's a deep point and hard to actually focus on. So when we think of that idea, right, we think about the fact that the souls come from the intellect of God. Beautiful. Now we understand that he, I want to give you this line because I feel like it was, we're saying that it originates in Hashem's wisdom. This is a line that I wrote down from Tzvi Freeman. He says, your soul is created into a reality where there is nothing other than God. Okay, I said that just in different words. When it's coming from a place where he and his wisdom are one, and your Nefesh HaLakis comes from that place where it knows that it is nothing other than God. Okay, why is that important? Because technically, you think that anything coming from that source, coming from that place, is all in this even playing field, right? So why is it that we don't all have the same neshama? Why is it that we don't all experience the greatness of that knowledge of I am one with Hashem and one with his greatness, and I am nothing apart from it? Why is it that you'll find that some Jews are much more spiritually attuned? Why is it that you'll find that some people are just more coarse than others? Why is there then distinction amongst Neshamas, like we were discussing, let's say, in chapter 1, where you have Tzadik Virale, Tzadik V'tayvle, where some Neshamas have the ability to completely transform themselves. Some do not even have that ability. Some are born into a situation where they are struggling all the time. So, but if you're saying that the Nefesh HaLakis comes from this place of God's intellect, where it knows that it's nothing other than Hashem, so where is distinction? Where is this chelek part where us as neshamis are all different somehow? So then the Alter Rebbe brings the analogy of the father and child, which is a really interesting analogy, especially with understanding that we have more science nowadays, helps us understand what the Alter Rebbe is trying to teach. The Alter Rebbe wants us all to know that there's a part of us that all come from the same place. And he doesn't want to let go of the fact that, yes, there is also distinction between neshamas. So how are you going to bring those two together? How are we going to understand that those two can be true at once? So the Alter Rebbe brings the example of the father and the child. What is the example of the father and child? He says that within the father's brain, when the father is interacting with the act of creating a child, there is a part within his brain that is activated. And that part of his brain that is activated, you will find ultimately in the finished product in that child's brain. Okay. And the Alter Rebbe says, this is a very important thing to understand, that the brain of the father, there's a part of that brain that started this ball rolling of where this child is going to ultimately come into fruition, right? And that child, the brain of that child, has something, an imprint, a genetic, whatever it is, that exactly mimics the father. And you'll look at the child and you'll say that there's a lot of distinction there. There's a lot of difference there. This child is not a carbon copy of his father. So how does that make sense? So the Alter Rebbe uses this very relatable example to help us understand the distinction between the distinction and the unique connection between Neshamas. Okay? So he basically draws this analogy between father and son, goes into all the developments of that analogy, and then brings it over to the Kedusha realm of how a neshama also is similar and distinct in this world to all other neshamas. Okay, so let's talk about the analogy for a moment. So when it comes to the father creating that child, there's a part of that father's brain that ultimately is also going to be the same inside the child's brain. How does this work? So I'm not a scientist, so I can't explain it to you. If you want, I could share with you the full write-up of how this works scientifically. But the way I understand it very simply, in simple language, is that there's ultimately this cell, right? This first distinct cell, which is joined with an egg, and they come together to be a creation. Now, what happens is as this baby is developing, which was just basically just a cell, it has an initial purpose. What is the purpose? To become life, right? To become life and to look exactly like this, whatever this is. After that, as it develops, you know, and the nervous system develops and the brain and heart develop, the most important parts that take the longest time to develop start right away at the beginning. They're at the heart of the gestation period and they continue developing throughout the entire time. As this starts forming, right? This cell starts forming and splitting off into other cells and splitting off into other cells. It also starts developing new purposes, new focuses. What now am I going to become? What now am I going to create, right? So then you have that single-minded purpose, which is to exist, right? To become whatever this creation is supposed to become. But it also has, ooh, I also have to become eyes and I also have to become ears. And I also have this, I also have to have this ability to feel and to touch and to taste. So then you have distinct cells developing their own processes and their own focuses, right? But ultimately still within the brain of each one of those cells is that imprint of exist. You need to exist. And that reflects that ultimate imprint of the father's brain as well. Okay, so if you were able to break it down, you would find that imprint still there, even though it also has its own distinct focus. Okay, which is what the Alter Rebbe is referencing to when he says, from the beginning, from when the brain is, when the cell or when that part of the child is developing, first the brain and heart, all the way down to when the that part of the body, those cells are creating the nails and the hair, which is the last to develop, which sometimes even develops even more later outside of the womb. All of those things are still connected and yet distinct. Okay. So that's the analogy, the mushel that the Alter Rebbe brings as a physical analogy for us to understand to and relate to the neshama. How does it translate into the neshama? So the Alter Rebbe brings a very fascinating, nuanced understanding of neshamas. And he says, you're right. At the core, right? At the source core, there's a part of you that is unified, that is connected, just like any other neshama. There's a part of you that is just the same as the same imprint as every other neshama. And then there's other parts of you that have gone through a process, just like the parts of your body have very distinct purposes and focuses. There's other parts of your neshama that have also been gone through and experienced a process that is going to make it distinct and unique. Okay. And there's a few different things that will contribute to making sure that your neshama is distinct and unique in its own way. Okay. So the things that will make it distinct and unique are, firstly, the makeup of the neshama. Okay. So there's a part of the neshama that feels very much connected to your body. Okay. That's the nefesh, ruach, and neshama. Those three first parts of the neshama are very much uniquely connected to the body that it's going to be servicing, to the body that it is actually invested in. So the nefesh is part of the life force of the body. The ruach is connected to the spirit, to the emotional part of your body. The neshama is connected to your breath and to the intellect of your body. It's invested in this body. And that is, first of all, one of the reasons why we have distinction. Just like in the analogy of the human body, where there is distinction between how I look and how my father looks or how another person looks, there's going to be some distinction because there's different levels of the neshama, and those different levels experience, we're going to get to that other part, experience difference in how they come into this world. And then there's parts of your neshama that are transcendent, that are beyond your body, and they are connected to a transcendent part of the human body, the human makeup, which is all of Bnei Yisrael. Okay, so now the Alter Rebbe is going to take this analogy and make it even a little deeper, where he says, like, just that, just like if you look inside your body and you see the cells that create your nails are connected ultimately to the cells that create your brain, so too, Am Yisrael, as a collective, as a human body, will have some neshamais that are like the nails of your toe, and some neshamas that are like the brain of this Am Yisrael body. Those neshamas that are in the brain are very lofty neshamas. Those neshamas are very much even more connected to the Yevishter, but you still have a link, just like that imprint in your physical body from this part of your nail to that part of your brain. There's still a source, core link between the two of them. So too, Am Yisrael as a body, as a whole, has a link between that neshama and the other neshama. And they both come from the same source. They both come from the same place. But there's distinction, right? So what creates the distinction? The first thing that we're going to discuss is how parts of our neshamas are more invested in this body, in this purpose, this, I don't want to say klipa, but it is this klipa that it's invested in. And everyone has their own purpose and their own body. And because it's matched to your body, so therefore there's going to be distinction. The other process, which we're going to be talking about a little bit more next week, is where the neshama goes through a gestation period, its development through the stages of the different worlds, how it's impacted by the different stages of the human world. So imagine this neshama is getting birthed into the world. That birth canal has different worlds, different stages of the labor, and some neshamas are affected differently by different stages, by different worlds, by different perceptions of reality. So some neshamais stay in a very lofty place, even though they're birthed into this world. They come straight down without going through a very difficult process, a difficult labor of being born into this physical world. And some go through a much longer gestation period. And that's going to impact the distinction between one neshama and another neshama. Similar to the concept of the brain being developing right away since the beginning of original zygote being developed into a cell and then developing into all the other cells and splitting off. And then the nail being one of the last things that's actually going through the gestation period, it had to go through all of that to get to where it's actually a cell in a nail, as opposed to the other cell, which was there the entire process. And in the same way, a neshama that goes through this process in a way that has a difficult experience or is only coming out at the very end, as opposed to the neshama that goes through the experience very smoothly and very swiftly. Okay? And we'll talk about that a little bit more next time. The Alter Rebbe finishes off this perek with talking about this very last concept, which I know there's a lot of concepts here, and we're trying to understand what is neshama, what is God, what do these lofty ideas have to do with me, and how am I going to make it practical? So the Alter Rebbe ends off with a very, very practical note, which is spoken a lot about a lot in Chabad circles, which is, when the Alter Rebbe says, and he finishes off with this parak explaining that there are loftier neshamas than others. And he says that at our core, we are connected, right? The cell that is on your nail, that you cut off your nails, you don't even feel pain when you cut your nails. That cell that's in that nail is still perfectly connected to a cell in your brain. It still has that imprint, that same original source core imprint. When we translate that into neshamas, there's different neshamas of a generation. So I'll speak about myself. I'm definitely one of those neshamas that is, you know, from the nail, which is far removed from the loftiness of those other neshamas. But those neshamas, right, let's think about those lofty neshamas. Those are the tzaddikim of the generation. And the Alter Rebbe says that a very important part of our avaida and getting attuned to our nefesh elikis, our godly soul, is being connected to those cells in the brains. Connecting yourself with a tzaddik is really, really important because it allows you to see, right? Just simply put, it allows you to see and come to face with the fact that I have a part of myself that I'm dead to, I'm not really recognizing or seeing, that is very much connected to this lofty neshama. This lofty neshama has the perception, has the ability to see Hashem in its experience and not feel disconnected from God, right? So this tzaddik, this brain cell, this, right, it's living an experience of absolute connection with Hashem. I have somewhere deep inside of me that ability to connect to that, but my neshama is very different from that neshama. The more that I could connect with that neshama, the more that I can also attune myself back to who I truly am at my core, even though my gestation period or my neshama has experienced difference and distinction. But if I could reconnect back to that neshama, to the leader of the generation, to the tzaddikim of the generation, then what I could do is come back to my source and look back at that source core imprint that is in the cells, you know, in the core of my very being, and come back to who I really am at my source, at my core. So that's why the Alter Rebbe right away begins with one of the easiest ways of Avaida. Remember, the whole chapter, the whole book is supposed to be about how can I serve Hashem? What is the best route through which I can service Hashem? And how is it possible for me, a regular layman, to serve Hashem with Ava and Yira and connect with Him in a real, wholesome, sincere way? Well, one of the very first ways to do it is chapter one, know who you are. Chapter two, see that who you are is an opening to what you are at your core as well. Meaning, just because we're being really honest about the fact that we're struggling even to be a Beinoni, and just because we're being honest that our neshama is maybe not on this extremely incredible level, lofty soul level of the leaders of the generation, doesn't mean that I don't have a connection to it. And I have access to that. And the more that I could connect to that tzaddik, the more I have access to who I am at my core. So this is like almost like a short way to start thinking about how can I start serving God from my neshama? Well, let me see the duality of what my neshama is. It's not the loftiest, but it has connection to the loftiest. The more I could, even in this physical, short-sighted klipa world, even in that world, if I could connect myself to a tzaddik, then what I'm doing is I'm meeting his neshama where my neshama truly is at, and I could awaken it. And I could start living from that place and seeing myself a little bit more as someone who's connected to someone as lofty as that, instead of seeing myself as this lowly neshama. Okay? So likely, like we've been saying throughout, you can hear how the Alter Rebbe is being super truthful, right? Super truthful, truthful, honest about exactly where you are as someone on the quest of becoming a Beinoni. And at the same time, is always so encouraging and saying, this is accessible to you. If you do this, if you grow in this area, you're doing exactly what we're all trying to do, which is take one step forward in your Avaida Hashem. So I think that that's a very inspiring aspect of the Tanya. But again, that's like my personal takeaway. And I know that this class is all about like Tanya for daily living. But for me, it continuously comes up as the Alter Rebbe's voice is so encouraging, so truthful, and yet so encouraging. And he says, attach yourself to that tzaddik. Think about what it means to be the neshama that you are and what you could do within your sphere of possibility, what you can do with your personal avaida. Remember, your avaida is your focus, right? It's your purpose. Don't try to own somebody else's focus and purpose. And whatever that is important. It's part of the whole body of Am Yisrael. So if your, you know, if your purpose is that nail or that, I don't know, the knuckle, whatever it is, own it and go with it. Take it as this is your purpose. Take it in hand and fulfill it to its utmost. So that is a big part of chapter two. We're going to finish the rest of chapter two next time because there's a lot of big ideas here. And God willing, next week, go on to Paragimel.